Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my guest tonight at the big table, I'm a huge fan. First signed in 1955 by Chicago's Chess Records, jazz pianist Ramsey Lewis is considered to be one of the best Chicago jazz musicians to ever tickle the keys. Ramsey Lewis has been producing music since he was a child, and what's always been great about Lewis is his diversity, whether it's straight-ahead classic jazz, electric fusion, smooth jazz, or even classical music. He just excels. This year, the jazz great turned 81 years old, and he's still making music, performing live. To date, 75 to 80 albums under his belt. It's my honor to welcome Ramsey Lewis to the big table. Mr. Lewis, a pleasure.
Wow. Hi. How are you? I like that intro. Why don't you just call me Ramsey?
Ramsey. All right. We'll start there. Okay. 75 to 80 albums.
Yeah. Yeah. But you got to understand, I think I actually recorded about 60. The other 20 or so are, you know, they re-released the combinations.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like greatest hits and stuff like that.
And back when we first started recording, the Chess Brothers, they didn't know, you know, they were into R&B and blues. And they thought you should put out an album every 6 months. And even if you didn't get it out, come in and record every 6 months. And so it wasn't until the Beatles came out, which was sometime in the 60s, that they noticed that the Beatles were not doing albums every 6 months. That's when they told us, the artists, okay, you guys, maybe do one every year. So by the time they told us that, we had already, you know.
You already had 35 albums.
Exactly.
All right, well, let's talk about your career. I mean, I've read so many great stories about you as a child, one of which being that you started at like the age of 4 years old. I mean, that was sort of the beginnings of learning how to play and practice, but there really was a movement to teach you piano and music at a very young age.
Well, I mean, picture this. I'm in the floor of our living room, and I'm shooting marbles or whatever, playing with a train. I don't know what I was doing. And I hear my parents tell my older sister, Lucille, she's about 3 years older than me. She passed on, God bless her. So Lucille, my dad, Lucille, you're going to start taking piano lessons next week. Ernestine Bruce, who's our church organist, she gives people piano lessons in the neighborhood. And I'm shooting marbles. What I hear, not so much piano lessons, but she's going to get to go buy a cake, or she's going to get to do something special, or she's going to do. So I'm just, whatever she's doing, I found out it was good to say, I want to do that too. And they said, we can't afford, but we can't afford but one. I raised so much sand and so much whatever that they said, okay. And so they let me go with her, and we took lessons together.
Was there ever any cake?
No. We took lessons together for about 6 months, and after the first four lessons, I said, okay, I don't want to take lessons, because I didn't know you had to practice. See, I thought you go once a week for a half hour, and you learn to play the piano, and that's it.
That's it.
This stuff about go home and practice half hour, 45 minutes every day, fortunately, or unfortunately, the way you say it, the piano teacher said to my parents, Lucille probably has talent in other areas. In fact, we're sure she has talent in other areas, but not at the piano. However, little Ramsey has a lot of talent, and we think you should keep him. That's the worst thing I could have heard. Because my dad would come home, and he'd say to my mother, they call me Sonny. Oh, I shouldn't be saying this on the air. Now people are going to call. Did Sonny practice today? And if she said, no, he didn't practice today. Oh, my God. So I got in the habit of practicing every day. And I think it was the practicing that really helped me out to this day.
As you got a little bit older, there really was a push for you to play classical music, not necessarily jazz, or at the time you were actually playing gospel. But there was a worry when you started to make a transition to jazz music that you would undo the work that you did, or you would be trained differently, and that your parents really wanted you to be a classical pianist.
Well, that's true. One of the other church musicians, Wallace Burton, God rest his soul, had a band. At the time, he was in college, I was in high school. And he heard me play in church, and he heard me play gospel and classical music. So after church one Sunday, he said, hey, Ramsey, you want to play with our band? I'm like, yeah, I want to play with your band. So my mother was like, I don't know, you know, let's ask his piano teacher. And so my father and mother went down to talk to Dorothy Mendelson at Chicago Musical College, and they said, you know, they want him to play jazz. Was that going to mess with his technique to play Bach and Beethoven and Chopin? And she said, no, they won't. It won't. She didn't say mess with. It won't interfere with his technique. But here's something else she said. This is in the 50s or in the early 60s. She said, Mr. and Mrs. Lewis, to be honest with you, there are not a lot of opportunities for African-American or minority people to earn a living playing classical music. So I suggest that if Ramsey has opportunities in other areas, that he should take them. So, yeah, let him play with this jazz band.
As a musician yourself, and going back to that time, did you want to play that kind of music? Did you want to play jazz and gospel, or were you... Did you have your mind set on being a classical musician?
You know, at that time in my life, it was funny. I was just enjoying life. And I loved to play the piano. And it could have been, I loved to play classical music. So when I got to play with the band, it was wonderful. Funny thing happened, though, that first night with the band, Wallace Burton thought that I could play a lot of jazz songs, which I could not. So he said, okay, Ramsey, it's a seven-piece band. We're going to open with Charlie Parker's Confirmation. I don't know that. Well, then we'll open with Dizzy Gillespie's Groovin' High. I don't know that. Okay, let's play a standard then. We'll open with How High the Moon. I don't know that. So after about two or three or more of those songs, he said, just why don't you go sit over on the side? And he had to take me home. That's the other thing. I'm 15 years old. My parents says, okay, Wallace, you can take him, but you got to bring him home. All the thing was over at 10 o'clock at night. And on my way home, he says, Ramsey, if you want to learn this music called jazz, come over to my house, and I'll be glad to teach you. I went over to his house, and he started teaching me these things about jazz. Had he not said that,
right.
No telling what I would be doing.
That's Ramsey Lewis, my guest tonight. The legendary Chicago jazz musician, just one of the best musicians to come out of the Windy City of all time. Ramsey Lewis, will continue our conversation here at the Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. It's my pleasure to have Ramsey Lewis at the big table tonight. This is such an honor to have you in the studio. It means a lot to me. I've been listening to your music for a long time. I mean, I think Sun Goddess I ruined that CD. It's scratched up because I played it over and over and over. It's great to have you in studio. Ramsey Lewis, of course, a great Chicago jazz musician.
And this is a big table, by the way.
A very big table.
A very big table.
Well, Ramsey, let's talk about, I guess let's go right to the in crowd. Let's go to the trio. You talked about being 15 years old and being turned down to jazz. At what point did you start to recognize that you not only had something with jazz, but that you were going to be successful at this?
That's the other thing. I never dreamt about success, in quotes. I just wanted to be as good as I could be today and then better than I was yesterday. And one thing just led to another. Doors just opened. Speaking of the in crowd, L.D. Redd and L.D. Young Red Holt and I, Mm-hmm. We're playing a gig in Washington, D.C., and we needed to put out our next album, and we needed one more song. Well, at that point, we had found that putting serious jazz songs is fine. Songs by Charlie Parker, songs from the Great American.
That's sort of how you started, that kind of sort of classic, trio stuff.
But we had started two or three albums before this album putting what we called a fun song, something that you could dance to or shake your hips to or whatever. And we couldn't decide what that fun song could be for this album. So the waitress comes over, I'll never forget her name, Nettie Gray. She says, "What are you guys doing?" Because it was in Washington, so we ate at this coffee house every day. We're trying to think of a song to put on the album that's kind of fun and can dance to. She says, "Have you heard Dobie Gray's The In Crowd?" Eldie and Red had heard of it. I said, "I never heard it." So she says, "Let me play it when they had jukeboxes coffee shops." Hello. So she went over to the jukebox, played Dobie Gray's The In Crowd. I said, "Okay, we've got the meat of the album. We got this song from the Great American Songbook. We got this one, blah, 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 blah. This is our fun song." And we put it on the album. It was a live recording at the Bohemian Caverns in Washington, D.C., and we recorded Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So by the last set Thursday, Red Holt, the drummer, looked over at me and said, we haven't played that new song, The In Crowd." And now this place, Bohemian Caverns, is where John Coltrane and the hard boppers played, you understand? And they sit there and they have their hands under their chin and they kind of listen to what you're doing. And they applaud politely. And
it's not a dance place.
It's not a dance place. Right. So when we started The In Crowd, they were up on their feet. They're beating on the table. Well, you hear on the record, a lot of people thought it was overdub. People were just carrying on.
And that was real.
It was real. And the record company said, "Well, let's put that out." They did. And we never looked back.
It's so interesting because you, among others, but I would say that the trio and your work, it was really the crossover moment for jazz music. I mean, there was the jazz, you know, what was happening. It's so many different great artists were able to do straight-ahead jazz. But when you were putting out the fun songs, The In Crowd specifically, that's where it almost crossed over to pop music, to radio, where jazz got a little bit more, it just got a little bit more mainstream.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I'll always remember is The In Crowd was in the top five pop albums. I think the Beatles and Barbra Streisand, and I think we were number five. And I'll never forget that, seeing our name with those kinds of people.
Did you, at the time, thinking back to that, I mean, obviously crossing over like that was a huge accomplishment. How was it perceived by the jazz community to cross over to be a pop sensation?
Interesting. Great question. Now, this is like the 16th album, 15th album, and putting a fun song on the last four. The jazz crowd were like, "We love this group." The jazz critics, "We love this group," with the fun songs on these albums. Mm-hmm. But when it went pop, all of a sudden, the critics and the hard boppers were like, "We don't love this group anymore." It was like, "This is our group. We're part of this whatever. And we don't want you guys at large to know about them or to buy their records."
Right.
And so, as far as we were concerned, we'd rather make more money and play more gigs than to be the darlings of the
jazz world.
Right.
You know, the Ramsey Lewis Trio, I mean, your name was front and center. And at a certain point, and you've talked about this, the idea that there was a lot of friction around, it stopped being fun because there was so much friction about being famous. Some of the other artists were talking, in the trio were talking about, it's always Ramsey Lewis. At a certain point, it stopped being fun for you to be in the trio.
Well, you know, what happened, the name of the seven-piece band, L.D. Young, Red Holt, L.D. was the bass player in the band, Red Holt was the drummer in the band, Wallace Burton was the leader of the band. The band broke up, and we were the rhythm section.
Right.
And for a while, we called, the name of the band was The Clefs. So for a while, we called ourselves The Clefs, and then we said, "We can't be The Clefs because it broke up." Daddy O'Daly heard us playing.
Great DJ,
Lake Meadows Lounge. It's called Stelzer's. Lake Meadows Lounge, those days, called Stelzer's. And he used to come in almost once, twice a week. He was a big-time jazz disc jockey in those days. And he says, "You fellas, you should make a record." And we said, "Yeah, that would be great." So what do you call yourself? And we said, "Well, you know, we don't know. We used to be the Clefs." He says, "Well, if you make a record, you got to have a name." So he says, "Why don't you guys go home? When I come in next week, give me 3 or 4 or 5 names." We came back with the Humbugs or the whatever, you know, some really weird names. He said, no, you can't do that. So so we sort of shrugged our shoulders. He said, "I tell you what, the piano is in the lead most of the time, right?" And he's a piano player. "So just call it the Ramsey Lewis Trio." Well, we're like, okay. They're like, the Eldie and Red are like, okay, why not? Yeah, let's go make this record. And it was that way. It was Love and Kisses until the In Crowd broke out. And when the In Crowd broke out, the wives of the other guys said, "Why on radio? They're only talking about Ramsey Lewis." Now we're a partnership, and all three guys are getting the same money.
Right. It's not really about money. It's just about your name.
Yeah. I mean, and Huntley Brinkley, Ramsey Lewis Trio, the new group, the blah, 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 blah. I mean, at the end of the week, if it's $400, everybody gets $150 or whatever. And but the wives got that ego thing going. And from that day, from television and radio, people talking about my name, the guys now, they would start coming backstage. "Maybe we can change the name." I said, "Change the name?" I said, "Well, if you guys want to change the name." So one thing led to another. The group broke up. I mean, it's a shame it broke up, because by then we were making tons of money.
What did you do? I mean, at that point, were you like, "Well, I'm going to keep being Ramsey Lewis with different players?"
Ramsey
or what do you
Lewis.
Do? I mean, what do you do? Take us to that emotional point, because you guys came up together. You talked about being in Wallace's band. When the band breaks up, the Ramsey Lewis Trio, and I know we're going back a ways, but what was the emotional feel? Were you like, "I'm going to move on from this," or was it more like, "Well, I'm just, that's it"?
No. The way my parents brought me up and the talent that I had, I always felt that there was a brighter day ahead, no matter what it was. They formed Young Holt Unlimited, and they had a hit record, and they were hitting it pretty good there for 3 or 4 years, and then they broke up. But I just kept being Ramsey Lewis and putting out records, and people kept saying, we want to buy your record, and we want to come see you, and here we sit here today.
Ramsey Lewis, my guest tonight at the big table, talking about his illustrious career, one of the most prolific, legendary musicians to come out of the Chicago area. We'll continue our conversation after the news. Ramsey Lewis here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, Ramsey Lewis, a legendary jazz musician, one of the best to come out of Chicago of all time. We're talking about your career here in Chicago and around the world. One of the things we mentioned right before the news was the breakup of the Ramsey Lewis Trio, and you continued to work. What I've always been impressed by you, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but Sun Goddess is a record in which you really started to explore your creativity, try different things. You went electric with the piano. You almost on purpose tried to shed the old Ramsey Lewis, the sort of, you know, buttoned up in front of the piano, the trio kind of look. What was behind the idea of moving to a more of a fusion, or at the time a jazz fusion kind of feel in the 70s?
Well, just experimenting and having fun with it. And what happened with Sun Goddess, we were in the studio recording an album. And there was one concert in Washington, D.C. that we had to honor. So, of course, you go play this concert, and we'll go back to the studio when we get back. While I'm in Washington, D.C., now, the original trio the original trio had broken up, but the second trio mm-hmm. with Maurice White.
Right,
Cleveland
of course.
Eden,
right.
We were the trio, but then that trio broke up because Maurice White went on to form Earth, Wind, and Fire. So, now, I'm in Washington, D.C. Maurice White has Earth, Wind, and Fire, and they had just played Madison Square Garden. He had to call me. I said, "What's up, Reese?" We call him Reese. He said, "We just opened." They were new on the scene for Sly and the Family Stone, and we just blew him off the stage, Ramsey. Madison Square Garden was packed, and he went told me we played this, and we burned the stage down. Then he said, "Oh, by the way, I got a tune for you." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, and this tune is going to be bigger than the In Crowd or any hit you ever made." I said, "Wow." He says, "What's up?" I said, "Well, I'm in the studio right now, Reese." He said, "Well, why don't me and Verdine and a couple of other guys, on our way back to L.A., he had moved to L.A., stop in Chicago, and we'll record the tune with you, and then there you go." I said, "Okay." So sure enough, they stopped in Chicago. We went to Paul Serrano's studio. We spent 3 days on this tune. He wanted it just right, just so. And I said, "Okay." I said, "What are you going to name it? You have a name?" He says, "It's called Hot Dog It."
Yeah.
I said, "Oh, really?" "Yeah, Hot Dog It." So then we're packing up, and he said, "Ah, I have this other song, and it's only about 12 bars long, and that's it. So to make it long enough, you'll solo. We'll give Donald Meyer, the tenor saxophone player, he'll solo. We'll play the melody again, and then we'll solo out, and we'll fade out." We said, "Oh, but you got the hit, you know. Hot Dog It is the hit." So we said, "Okay." And we did just that. It took us about 3-4 hours to do this other song, because we had the hit. It took us 3 days. I said, "So what are you going to name this song?" And he thought for a while. He said, "Call it Sun Goddess. Call it Sun Goddess." And so we put out Hot Dog It. Radio played Hot Dog It for about 2.5 weeks and fell off the charts. But the album was running out of the stores. It was flying out of the stores. So the record companies did some research. People were just going in on their own because album stations, there were, in those days, there were stations that played album cuts. Mm-hmm. This cut was 7-8 minutes long. And they found out, well, they're asking for this song called Sun Goddess. So we did a shorter version and put that out.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and so the rest is history.
Well, I mean, again, you've had this great relationship. You've been the spokesperson, but you've also been, you know, a guy who gets disapproval from the jazz community because there wasn't necessarily a lot of fervor for jazz musicians doing fusion or doing what you were doing. I mean, I think of you, Miles Davis was doing it at a certain point, but it seemed like in the 70s and even into the 80s, jazz musicians made a change, and that same jazz crew that didn't really like that sound.
Yeah, but you know what? It's interesting you brought up Miles Davis's name, because you're right. Through the 60s and very early 70s, it was like electric music, synthesizers, too many guitars, this, that, and the other. Until Miles Davis did it with Chick Corea on electric piano and John McLaughlin on,
right,
on electric guitar. Once Miles Davis did it, it was okay. Everything was fine, you know, whatever you want to do. So it was a wonderful thing.
Just for time, I could go for every album that you've done. We'd go into the decades. One of the things, as we move to more of the issues around jazz music, unfortunately, we've seen over the last decade or so, or maybe even longer, a real drop-off with jazz. It's not as robust. It's not as healthy as it once was, seeing no radio airplay. Even jazz stations are going away. For you, as somebody who spent a lot of time in jazz radio at WNUA here in Chicago and frankly have been an ambassador for jazz music, how do you feel about the idea that this country is moving away from jazz music?
I don't feel good about it because jazz is America's contribution to world culture. You can't say that European classical music at Orchestra Hall and Symphony Hall and Carnegie Hall is our music. No, it's great music, and we should perform it. Ballet. What is America's contribution? Well, you can say country western. Yeah, you can say some pop music, but they're the influences from Europe there, but substantial music, jazz is our contribution. I think what happened when they took music out of the schools, in the public schools, because a lot of kids that went into R&B and some of them went into jazz, first introduced to the to music in general in the public school system.
Right.
Not only the history of the music, but what's a chord? What's a note? How do you sing in harmony? And, you know, I went to school in the inner city, Wells High School. We had a boys' course, a girls' course, a mixed course. And out of that, kids would want to sing solo. Out of that, out of orchestra, guys wanted to play solo trumpet. Out of that, so all of a sudden now, where they want to cut the budget, you know, let's face it, a lot of people coming that play jazz came from the black neighborhood, African-American neighborhood. And they were allowed to take the instruments home. Those that stood out, you can take the trumpet home, Johnny, but you got to sign it out. Your parents have to blah,
right,
blah,
of course.
And so once that was cut out of the public school system, there was a big drop, number one. Number two, those that were able to maintain in some order or fashion and progress, radio. Okay, there's two or three stations in Chicago. There are two or three stations in New York. There's at least one station in most major cities. Radio kept jazz alive. And then whatever that was all about, smooth jazz didn't help because although I was a part of it, the people from Madison Avenue saw that that was a way to sell more advertising and maybe straight-ahead jazz was not the way to sell advertising.
They're really not the same thing. I mean, you, of all people, know that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they put more advertising dollars behind pushing
smooth jazz.
In fact, at WNUA, I had to go into the people and say, you know, this music's okay. It's okay. But you got to let me play Oscar Peterson every now and then. You got to let me play Count Basie every now and then. And for about 3 or 4 weeks, they were like, oh, what if somebody tunes in and you're playing Oscar Peterson and then they don't know what station they're listening to? They might think that they're not listening to WNUA. I said, let's give it a try. And sure enough, people wrote in, we're so glad to hear Sarah Vaughan on WNUA. We're so glad to hear Oscar Peterson. But when radio died away and jazz was no longer honored in the schools, our music started. Nowadays, it's difficult getting a foothold to get the music. You know, there's a movement here in the United States because as I travel about, almost every high school has a jazz band. There are 500,000 kids playing jazz today. Almost every college has a jazz band.
Right.
And so we say, what happens to these kids when they graduate from college? Why don't they become consumers? Why don't they demand to have a jazz club in their neighborhood? Or why don't they go to Ravinia more often? At this point in time, believe it or not, in the last several days, few weeks, there are a group of us here in Chicago exploring that premise. Why haven't kids coming out of college become consumers?
What I mean, as you explore it, what are some of the theories around that?
I don't have them yet.
You don't have them yet. It's too early in the research.
When we have them, if you invite me,
you're back.
I'll be glad to come back.
Yes,
and say,
of course.
Here's what we found.
Yes, I'd love to have you back. That'd be a great conversation. Your career, I mean, you have continued to put out music. And like we said at the beginning, 75, 80 albums. You also are working on new music every single day.
Yeah.
You've got your piano in your house. You mentioned even before we started that it's almost like a habit for you. Talk about, you know, what music means to you and what it means to you now at the age of 81 years old. What is music and what does it do for you in your life?
Music is like having breakfast and having lunch and having dinner. When I go to the piano, it's like that. I mean, if I don't go to the piano at least once a day, then my day is incomplete. Now, when my wife and I go on vacation or something is up where I can't, then it's okay because I understand, hey, you're on vacation, buddy.
Right.
You know. But if there are 52 weeks in the year, I go out on weekends and play concerts, which means most weeks, Monday through Thursday or so, I'm home. And almost every day, if not every day, for about 3-4 hours or more a day, I'm at the piano practicing Hanon or Bach or Chopin, and then I put that away and I just start writing some music. I find it very inspiring to keep my foot in classical music, to keep my hands in classical music. In fact, sometimes I'm playing some Bach, and I'll get to a phrase da da dee da dee, and I'm like, oh, really? I close the book And I'll get out my pencil, and I'll say, ah, do-do-deedle-deedle-da-dee-dee, and I can write up, you know. So this world of music is so rewarding in so many different ways for me.
You know, for you, I mean, you've had an opportunity with Ravinia, working at Ravinia, doing the workshop and being a part of the Ravinia jazz experience there. Also working at Merritt Music, some of the places that you've been able to stay in music. But one of the things you did at Ravinia was have the opportunity to play with the symphony orchestra and do a little bit more classical music. You know, when you think back to how we started this conversation about being 4 years old and learning classical music, it's sort of this full circle idea of Ramsey Lewis, the great jazz aficionado, the great jazz musician, Ramsey Lewis, being able to get back to what he started in, which was classical music.
Well, one of the biggest thrills that I had was last year performing with the CSO, Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Wells Kaufman, of course, runs the Ravinia Festival. And a year or so before that, he says, Ramsey, how would you like to play with the CSO? I said, great. So I thought he meant play some songs. He says, why don't you write something? I said, whoa, write something for the CSO? You know, it's overwhelming because the CSO is one, if not the number one orchestra in the world, it's number one and a half. Or whatever. I mean, you know, it's right. The number one orchestra in the world. So I went home, and I for a few weeks, maybe at least 3-4 weeks, I'm sitting at the piano, and I'm trying all kinds of stuff. And my wife says, what are you doing? I said, I can't get started. She said, you know, you're too overwhelmed with Tchaikovsky and Beethoven, and close those books. Stop trying those classical figures and just improvise. I've seen you, she says to me. I've seen you go to the piano, sit down, and for an hour or more, just improvise. Just play whatever comes to mind. Turn on a tape recorder, and afterwards, see what you got. I did that for 2-3 days. And afterwards, I turned it on, and I said, voila, there's a phrase. Oh, there's another phrase. And I find that gave me the confidence to say, you know, you've got some music in you that can be arranged for Chicago Symphony Orchestra and the Ramsey Lewis Trio.
It's amazing to have you in studio, Ramsey. Big fan of yours. You've made such a contribution to the city of Chicago, not just with music, but being here broadcast and being a citizen here in the city. I'd love to have you back because I'd love to talk about that study that you guys are putting together. Ramsey Lewis, great jazz musician, one-time radio broadcaster here at WNUA. Ramsey, thanks for being my guest tonight at the Big Table.
Great being with you.